Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for your patience. A lot of things going on today, press conferences, other things. I'd like to officially convene the meeting of the Ways and Means Committee. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the last meeting of yesterday in front of us. Representative Detmer moves approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Seeing none. All in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have two items of business today, the tax bill and changing the budget resolution. And I'm going to start with the walkthrough on the tax bill. But first, Representative Carlson, you look like you got a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, could you mention at the end of the meeting yesterday, and then I'll have a follow-up question, the bills that you were going to take up, and ag was kind of in play as a maybe. Could you give me the sketch of what you thought was going to be next week again? Not maybe day by day, but obviously with what's happening now, I assume the ag bill will be next week.
Yeah, we're planning on taking up the ag bill next week, Representative Carlson. And I guess the reason for the delay has been that with the avian flu crisis, we've been trying to gather more information on how much additional money should go into the bill. And, you know, frankly, it's, you know, kind of a moving target. But at this point, I guess we feel like, you know, it's time to make a decision and get going. And we will pass the bill, and then whatever we need to do in the conference committee as things change, we will do. But I guess I would anticipate that we'll do agriculture early next week, probably Monday. And I guess, you know, you had mentioned another bill, the LCCMR bill. You know, I haven't really thought about that much, but I would guess that we will do that. You know, we'll certainly do it next week, probably early next week. And I guess I just would, you know, watch for the posting on that, and I'll keep you informed on that. And I know, as I mentioned, I've got, you know, another bill, the ratification bill, that's certainly of interest to me, and I think a lot of other people. We want to get that done one of these days, but we've, you know, wanted to get the omnibus bills off the calendar.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that's the reason I raised the question to double check, and I quite honestly don't know how LCCMR plays into this, but the third deadline is today at 11:59, so the ag bill won't be meeting deadline, and I'm not sure if that rule, I'm assuming it does. It says major appropriation and finance bills, so I would consider LCCMR a major bill, but I quite honestly don't know the history because we're acting a little bit late on that, but there's at least one and possibly two then that won't be meeting deadline.
And Representative Carlson, what I guess I would say is, first of all, I think the rules are actually in somewhat conflict. If you look at the joint rules, I think there's an argument to be made that there is no deadline for this committee, but I guess it's my expectation that we're going to be sending at least the agriculture bill to the Rules Committee, and I guess I'll have to look at the rules a little more closely and decide what to do with, for example, the LCCMR bill. Well, this, I guess, if it needs to go to rules, it's, you know, that's fine.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is the Senate concurrent resolution that set the deadlines in place that I have before me. And I know there is the escape hatch, so these bills will have to go to rules, and obviously for sure the ag bill will have to go to rules, as I would read this. So if we act on it then on Monday, then it would have to go to rules, which means re-referral on the House floor.
Yeah.
But this is House joint Resolution Number 4 has introduced the 89th Legislative Session 2015 and 16, posted on January 29th. And it set all the deadlines, and that, and today is the deadline. Like I say, there is an escape hatch, but I think you'll have to account for a re-referral to rules then, when you take action on the ag bill on Monday. This would be my interpretation.
Yeah, Representative Carlson, that would be my interpretation, too. I guess I've been handed a copy of the rules, and, you know, it says the deadline is today to, quote, act favorably on major appropriation and finance bills. And I think if you look in the House rules, we define what those are.
Yeah.
The agriculture bill is in that. The LCCMR bill is not in that. So I guess as I think about it a little bit more and discuss it with you, I guess it would be my position based on what I know now that the LCCMR bill, since it's not on that list, would not have to go there. But you're correct, the agriculture bill will.
The reason I mention LCCMR is it says major appropriation and finance bills, and I know we list those in House rules, but then this is the joint resolution, so maybe when you say there is some potential conflict there, that might be the case. But at any rate, minimally, the ag bill would need to go.
Okay, yeah, we'll take a look at that. Okay, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my understanding that the Senate has yet to take up the LCCMR bill. I'm chief author here in the House, and so there's really not any urgency for us to move on it. But as soon as it's called for it, we'll get to work.
I just care about it.
All right. Seeing no further questions, we will turn to the tax bill. Representative Davids moves that House File 848 be referred to the General Register. Representative Davids, would you like to, I know you've got an author's amendment. Do you want to take that first and get that done, or how do you want to proceed?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I'd just like to get it in the order that I prefer so that we can debate it accordingly. And there's also a A34 amendment. Is that Representative Albright's, maybe?
Maybe. Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, yes, that would be an amendment that Chair Davids and I have been working collaboratively on, and it's my understanding that this time that he would accept that as a favorable amendment.
So, Mr. Chairman, if we could.
So, do you want to, Representative Davids moves the A49 amendment. Why don't we do that, then? That's the author's amendment to get it in the shape that you want.
That's correct.
Okay, any discussion to the A49 amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we should know what it's doing.
Sure. Representative Davids, you want to briefly walk through the author's amendment?
Sure. Basically, I'm going to have Cynthia Templin go through some of the first parts. The second part has to do with moving some payments, 18 points.
This is not the one then that impacts on the budget resolution?
No, this does not impact the budget resolution.
That's, that's what I was thinking. Okay, you can proceed. I was thinking it was the one that.
It looks to
like my mistake. I was thinking that was our conversation about the budget resolution.
Yeah, no, this does not impact the budget resolution.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want to still go through it as thoroughly, but.
If we just put it on, it'd be fine, unless anyone wants a further description.
Okay. All in favor of the A49?
So thank you.
All in favor of the A49 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A49 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, members.
Okay, and then we have the A34 amendment. I believe this is a Representative Albright amendment. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. Representative Albright moves the A34 amendment. Representative Albright, why don't you describe it?
There were two bills of a similar nature that made their way through the various committees and ended up in Chair Davids' committee. One was authored by Representative Crecia, the other one was by myself. The amendment, the A34, is our attempt between the two sides to culminate in a shared effort at new tax credits, the new market tax credits, section 2, Chair Davids' bill.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Davids,
this amendment was in bill form and heard in committee and included. One form, I think we took Crecia's bill, was put in, and they agreed on a few changes here.
Chair Davids, do you have any comments on the A34 amendment yourself?
Mr. Chairman, I support the amendment.
Okay. Other discussion on the A34 amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, and to Tax Chair Davids, do you support it like you support the monarch butterfly?
Well,
Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney. Later on, I was going to mention there's one amendment that Representative Kahn and I are still working on, and it's to give tax credits for butterfly conservatories and for the lepidopterists, so that they can study monarch butterflies and other types of moths. But we're still working on that. We're not prepared for that today. And I'm a champion of butterflies, Mr. Chairman.
The Lepidoptera Reserve Tax Credit.
That's not an amendment.
All right. All right. Seeing no discussion on the A34 amendment. All in favor of the A34 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A34 amendment is adopted. All right. Well, Chair Davids, why don't you walk us through your bill?
Okay.
Or have fiscal staff do the spreadsheet, whatever you prefer.
Mr. Chair, I'll present this however the committee would like, but since this is the Finance Committee, there's a ton of good policy, and I want to make sure that my numbers work for me here and for the committee. This is called the Don't Stop Believin' Tax Bill, and I'll be going through it line by line on the House floor. There's just a lot of really good provisions for Minnesotans in this bill, but I think today we need to be talking about money, and I have two folks here from Fiscal, Ms. Cynthia Templin and Ms. Schill. And so I'll turn it over to them if that's okay for the money and to make sure that we're fitting within our numbers.
Ms. Schill, Ms. Templin, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. We will be covering just the cover page of the spreadsheet. It's a fiscal summary page. And you can see at the top, almost at the top, the total general fund revenue changes. And for the 16-17 biennium, there are $2.415 billion in revenue reductions. And in the tails, there is a total revenue reduction of $3.371 billion.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. For the general fund revenue, general fund expenditure changes, I've got two lines on the summary sheet. Fiscal 2015 only, there's spending of $18,750,000. And then the next line down, you'll see a cost savings of $147,789,000 in fiscal 16 and 17, and then $203,658,000 in fiscal 18 and 19. So when you add both the revenue and expenditure changes together for fiscal 16 17, you have $286,825, and for the tails, you have $3.167,985,000. When you compare that to the proposed spending on the next line down, which is $5.648,166,000, compare that to the target of $5,653,920,000. The variance, the bottom line variance, is $5,754,000. Further down the sheet, you'll find the transfers out of the general fund in the 2016-17 biennium of $100 million. That is going into the budget reserve. And that is the summary total of this bill.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Templin.
One final comment, too. That transfer to the reserve is not included in the committee's budget target. That is just to effectuate the budget resolution.
All right. Chair Davids.
That's my bill. I appreciate your support.
I do wonder, Chair Davids, do you want to walk through any of the other high-level items in the bill?
Oh, I sure can. I'd be more than happy to. In fact, as you look at the bill, there was a LUIC provision that we put in for Social Security income. It's a tax subtraction. We're not going to be taxing it. That phases in over a period of years. We have a Heintzman bill we had a lot of help from the chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee, Chair Detmer, to not tax military pensions in Minnesota, and there's a formula used for that. Probably the biggest item would be an exemption, like the federal exemption you have for each person in the country. That's a $4,000 exemption at the federal level. We're doing about 25% of that, or a $1,000 exemption. For Minnesotans, there's items in here that we have a very big emphasis on student loan refundability for folks, students that are or graduates of universities that have student loans. And there's many smaller provisions in the bill. We took some of the language from the governor's recommendation for child care tax credit. Not at his level, but we have a placeholder for that. I think that's a very important provision. We took the Loon bill on that. Representative Will's bill, Section 529s, we're putting about $40 million into that. We have a subtraction and we also have a credit. We included both. You can have one or the other. Of course, probably my two favorite parts of the bill, two of my favorite parts of the bill would be the ERDL credit for certain master's degree education. And I love Representative Slocum's Zapper bill. We spent quite a bit of time, some time in committee on that. We had presentations from the Department of Revenue. And that support, I'm getting too far in the weeds when I start talking about Zappers, but that's a real good one. Chair Graskowski has the property tax division report in here, and he may want to make some comments on that, Mr. Chairman. His committee spent hours and hours and hours putting that provision together. Maybe if Chair Graskowski might be able to give a few highlights to that portion of the bill.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, before we do that, I think I'd like to take up the budget resolution. We've got the amendment to the amendment that I'd spoke to Chair Carlson about that's ready to be passed out now, and I think we can maybe act on that and then come back to Chair Graskowski. So I'm going to temporarily lay House File 848 as amended on the table, and members, we're going to pass out the budget resolution. There is an amendment, which is the A27 amendment, and then there is an amendment to the amendment, which is the A28 amendment. And while they're being passed out, members, I'll just simply describe them. First, I'll move the A27 amendment, and the A27 amendment just basically increases the target for the Agriculture Committee by $893,000 and increases total spending by $893,000. You may recall that's the amount of money that we had in spending to combat avian flu that passed off the House floor a few days ago here when we declared an emergency. It's my understanding that money is also going to be in the agriculture finance bill, and so that's why we wanted to have that. And then, members, I'll move the A28 amendment to the amendment. Of course, I'll take some discussion in a moment on that, but just to describe what it does, it adds an additional $10 million to the agriculture bill over and beyond the $893,000 that I just spoke to you about. And I guess Chair Hamilton isn't here, but he and I have had lots of discussions over the last week trying to get a handle on just what we need to set aside for the avian flu crisis. And I know that he has some other items in the bill that he has proposals on too, but anyway, we want to make sure that we have sufficient funds in the agriculture bill for that. In addition, if you look at page 1, line 6, we're proposing to increase the budget reserve by $50 million from $100 million to $150 million. Page 1, line 7 is an adjustment to the tax committee. It actually reduces the tax target by $5,753,000 to conform to the tax bill as it is before you today. And so if you net out the $10 million additional money to the ag bill that's in the A28 amendment to the amendment, subtract the $5,754,000 decrease in the tax bill, you have net additional spending of $4,246,000, which is the increase on page 1, line 3. So I know that's a little bit of a handful of information, but members, discussion to the A28 amendment to the amendment. Representative Carlson.
Just so I follow it then, Mr. Chairman, was the tax bill, it's been a few days, so I thought he was right at his target when it left taxes, but was he that amount below his target?
Representative Carlson, it is my understanding that he was that amount below the target.
Okay, so there won't be any need for any more amendments to the tax bill when it's back before us again, is what you're saying.
That is correct. Well, actually, we have one further amendment, and that would be to increase the budget reserve size from $100 million to $150 million, because the budget reserve this year is actually being carried in the tax bill.
I was referencing the...
The spending, yeah.
The 5.75, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Other discussion to the A28 amendment to the amendment. I certainly want to be respectful of people and taking any other questions or anything people may have on this.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my only comment is that the rumors throughout the morning were true.
There are lots of rumors around this place, Representative
Carlson. This was one that came true.
Of course, there were probably many rumors floating around, so any number of them could have been
true. That was the only one that I really heard, so...
Oh, all right.
And from more than one source, so...
All right. Well, you have good sources, Representative Carlson. All right. Well, if I don't see any other discussion to the A28 amendment to the amendment, all in favor of the A28 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A28 amendment to the amendment is adopted. Members, then we have the A27 amendment as amended to the budget resolution. Any discussion on that? Basically, it's the same thing as what we just voted on, except it's got an additional $893,000 for the ag bill for the avian flu. Seeing none, all in favor of the A27 amendment as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A27 amendment as amended to the budget resolution is adopted. With that, members, we'll take up the 848, House File 848 as amended off the table. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's so many good provisions in this bill that I forgot one of them. It's one of the major ones as far as the dollar numbers go. It's an Earhart provision for the estate tax to phase in full conformity to the federal estate tax. Chair Lincheski, a couple years ago, started kind of an, I don't really call it an inflator, but an increasing amount each year until it capped at $2 million, I believe, at the state level. The feds are at 5.4. This is a provision that would, after a period of years, I think 6 years maybe, would fully conform with the feds. So that's another major part of the bill. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Property Tax Division and Local Government Chair Draskowski for a summary of the division report.
Chair Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Property tax items I'm going to cover, the major ones, begin on page 3 on line 29, and that is the school building bond agricultural credit as it's defined on the sheet. And what that is a property tax credit that happens actually, it comes in the form of an income tax credit for agricultural land that is encumbered by a school construction levy, and it reduces the liability for that property by half, or reduces it in half, comes out to $49,400,000 per year, and that's House File 2077. Under that, on lines 30 through 36, you'll see some of the income tax interactions for various parts of the bill. And as I understand, line 30 is actually going to be gone now because education got rid of the student achievement levy, so that item will disappear. Then we could turn to page 5 of the spreadsheet, beginning on line 127 or 123, 123 I guess is where you would start. This is the change to the statewide property tax, and it is a cut in the 16-17 biennium of $453,300,000 that is achieved by exempting and then repealing the statewide general levy for all businesses throughout Minnesota up to $500,000 of value, so their first $500,000 of value. And the same for the seasonal rec, only it's up to $250,000 of value for all seasonal recreational property in the state. So those are really the two major items of the bill. On top of that, there are some additional items in lines or in pages 9 through 12, I believe, of the spreadsheet. And if there's any questions on those, we can certainly answer those, Mr. Chair. But there are most of those items don't have a lot of fiscal impact. You'll find all the TIF and local option sales tax and other provisions in there. A lot of good authors. The authors on the statewide property tax include Representatives Wills, Earhart, Hertaus, and myself. So as you look at the provisions, we had a lot of bipartisanship in our committee. As a matter of fact, Mr. Chair, we heard, I think, I didn't count them up, but probably as many or maybe more Democrat bills than Republican bills, actually. And you see that very well reflected in the composition of the contents of the report.
All right. Chair Davids, do you have anything else in terms of an overview to the bill that you'd like to do?
It's not a major cost item, but the range delegation, Representative Ancels, had House File 416. We did include that in the bill for the Iron Range area of northern Minnesota. So that on the floor, I mean, we're balancing, we're meeting the requirements of the Ways and Means Committee. On the floor, I'll be going through each and every item and each and every author, and we'll be on some of the major ones. We'll give them chances to take a look at it. So whenever this is scheduled for next week, you know, you might want to bring your camper or something and plan on staying for a while, but it's fun. It's all good.
All right. Well, members, I'm sure there are some questions for Representative Davids, but I guess if we could, I'd like to deal with the one other amendment I need to deal with that I have here, and it's an oral amendment just on the budget reserve. It's page 240, line 23, delete 100 million and insert 150 million. And members, I know that this amendment has not met the deadline. As chair, I'm going to waive the deadline. I did do that for Representative Kahn the other day when her North Star Rail study didn't meet the deadline. So we haven't done it very much, but I guess I've done one for Representative Kahn, so I hope people won't feel poorly of me if I happen to do one for myself. So I'll move that oral amendment, page 240, line 23, delete 100 million, insert 150 million. Is there a discussion to that amendment? See no discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right. Discussion to the bill. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davids, you went so fast at the beginning, and you just sort of mentioned something about Social Security and Social Security not being taxed. Could you explain that a little bit slower and more thoroughly?
Yes, thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Murphy, in Minnesota is one of the few states that actually taxes Social Security benefits for seniors. What we're doing is, I think it's the Lewick bill we're taking, and we're going to phase out that tax. Because right now, if you as a couple, maybe Mr. Michael could help me, is it $34,000 when you start getting taxed? How about for a couple? Okay. So, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, there's various levels where if you hit those levels down as low as $18,000, $25,000, $34,000, $43,000, depending on single, married, depending on several factors there, you have that income coming in, and then when you put your Social Security income added to that, you're taxed on your Social Security. Now, we're not touching the federal tax on that because that tax is quite severe. If you make more than so much, you have to add back in 50% as income, and I think the next level is 85% as income. So what we're trying to do here
as many states have already done, is phase out and eventually eliminate the inclusion for taxation of Social Security benefits. And I do get more calls on that than I do on butterflies, just so you know.
So far.
Representative Murphy.
So far.
Other discussion to the bill. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Chair Davids. And I'm sure you can imagine that I have some objections to the bill. But I do, Mr. Chair, want to thank Chair Davids. He's been a great chair this year and has been very fair and open to ideas and, of course, always got a great sense of humor. So, and you serve on the committee, Mr. Chair, so you know that. But I do want to mention a few concerns. I think, Mr. Chair, you can see that, the minority decided not to introduce a bunch of amendments here today. So I'd rather just, talk about a few of the concerns. And, I think people want, they take omnibus bills and they frame them in, their best view. And I'd just like to give an alternate view to what you've heard so far. This, as it's been stated in other bills, for example, in the K-12 bill, the tax bill has $14 for every dollar that Chair Loon has in the education bill. And I think that highlights the problem, the fundamental problem with this bill is it's crowding everything else out. The reason a number of chairs received the targets they got was because this bill is so large. Now, that's certainly a philosophical difference, and I respect that, but while this bill, I guess, technically meets your requirement, Mr. Chair, that it's in balance, it's only in balance because it's being designed and laid out in a way that is not in balance, in a way that's difficult for the public and for members here to understand, and I do want to talk about that a little bit. So the cost of this bill, if the provisions in the bill were phased in all at once, as they should be, is not the cost of this target. In fact, it's about double. So if you to the bill, we all got the spreadsheet, and, Mr. Chair, on the actual spreadsheet, because that's what the Ways and Means Committee does, is look at spreadsheets, on page 8, line 215, we see what is the target being met, what is the target in the tax bill, and it's $2,415,874, or $2,415,000. $864. So, that's sort of the size of the tax cut. Now, I think even Chair Davids would agree with me on this, that 2.4 really you have to think about as $2 billion plus $400 in spending for transportation. So this is also what's funding the transportation bill, and I know that chair didn't walk through the bill because he's not a tax chair, but this is where the money is for the transportation bill, and it's really just robbing the general fund. It's carving off current dedications, our current sales tax receipts that we fund other things with no explanation as to how we're going to find that $600 million in the out years or $400 million in this year. But if you, on line 215, in fact, priced out the provisions that are only being phased in slowly and instead said, let's just do honest budgeting without gimmicks and let's just pay for them all at once. And I asked the Department of Revenue to do that along, and they're nonpartisan for the public who may wonder what that is, and House Fiscal staff who are nonpartisan. And the price tag of the provisions in the bill is not $2.4 billion. It is $4.5 billion if we phased it in. And I can provide that to people. So, members should know that. You're not voting for a bill here that costs $2.4 billion. It's $4.5 billion if the provisions were phased in all at once. So, this is sort of, in my estimation, the way you shouldn't budget, and you should pay for things at what they cost rather than decide out in the future it's going to be someone else's problem. So, just a few of them. Chair Davids mentioned Representative Earhart's estate tax provision, and if you look at that provision, which is in this spreadsheet, you can find that on line 115. Again, I know this gets a little detailed, but this is the Ways and Means Committee, and this is where we are supposed to look at spreadsheets. So on line 115, you would look at that and think that the 16-17 cost of that provision is $60 million. And in fact, if it was fully phased in all at once, that provision, and I have it on another sheet of paper, and again, these are nonpartisan numbers that I can provide to you. That provision alone actually costs $171 million. So, I mean, this is you know, a unique way to do budgeting, I guess, where you just say, well, we're going to phase something in, and we're going to say it costs $60 million, but it really costs $171 million, and it's just going to be out there in the future where people can't see it. You know, there are a number of these. I know in the Chair David's, one of his amendments, he did some change, or I think it was Representative Albright, who changed some of the hidden cost of the new corporate tax credit. It's called the New Markets Tax Credit, and moved it a little bit up into the window so we could see it. When we were in tax committee, it had 4 years of zeros, but over 5 years it cost $96 million. So now we've moved it up a little, so we're starting to see the $20 million price tag a year, but it's still not fully reflected in the bill. And I would say, you know, the big kahuna here, the Social Security has been mentioned, the price tag on that one, and for members on the spreadsheet, that's listed as costing $236 million in this biennium. And if it was phased in fully, so members could actually see what it really costs, it's $754 million. So it's three times the price. But yet we're not seeing that. And so, you know, I think these examples highlight some of the problems in the bill, not from a philosophy about what you think you should cut, but just straight up budgeting, just how you should do budgeting, where people see what things really cost. And what this bill really costs is not $2.4 billion, it costs $4.5 billion if the provisions were phased in. If you look at the corporate tax cuts in the spreadsheet that's in front of us, and I might have to ask Ms. Temp, nope, I found it. It's line 127 on page 5 of the spreadsheet, and members can find that, and that's a, you know, quarter of the bill. It's $453 million to give corporate tax cuts. Okay, well, what is the real price of that if it was fully phased in right now instead of out into the future where people can't see it? Nonpartisan numbers, $1.698 billion. That provision is $1.7 billion. We will lose $5 billion from that provision over the forecast window, yet we're looking at it as if it's costing us a half a billion. So, you know, Mr. Chair, I think the burden really is on you. Chair Davids has met a target technically within 1617 and 1819, but, you know, as I just laid out to you, that this is actually deficit spending. This is creating a brand new deficit with no plan to pay for it. It's unsustainable, and it's forcing all the rest of the budget out. You know, on top of that, I think, you know, one of the concerns is, and you know, I know you'll have a response, Mr. Chair, and I know Chair Davids will too, but it seems to me you're setting yourself up for failure here a little bit in the next 3 weeks. I mean, I don't think a $2.4 billion tax cut could be signed, but I certainly think $4.5 billion in tax cuts, when people see them, really what they cost in a spreadsheet, I think people know there's nobody who's going to be, you know, wanting to do deficit, you know, create a new deficit. So I think, you know, you, Mr. Chair, are going to have to answer to that, because I'm now, and I will provide it to you, telling you the real price tag of these provisions. So I don't know if you had the other finance chairs, if it was okay to start new spending that you said you can put it in at 5% a year, and then, you know, someday, way out in the future, someone will actually pay for that. But that's what's happening in the tax bill, and I'm not talking about the philosophy of the provisions, just you know, irresponsible budgeting in my estimation on, you know, what the spreadsheet looks like. Not the individuals. Chair David's a very responsible person. I know you are too, but I think maybe people haven't thought about this, and they maybe haven't asked for the research to understand what the true cost of these provisions are. So, you know, I further want to say, just beyond that, as I think for those who've served on the tax committee, and a lot of the people in this room have, you know, this bill is kind of going backwards as far as tax reform goes. With all due respect to Chair Drazkowski, now the property tax system is even more complicated than it was before. It's even less transparent than it was before. It's even less reliable than it was before. And on top of that, it's got local government aid cuts. And I know some members feel comfortable voting for local government aid cuts and cuts to county program aid because they're not their particular cities, but it's still the fact, and it still will be true, that when members take that vote, they will be voting to cut local government aid. And you know, I know we had we spent a lot of time in the tax committee talking about, you know, what would be the logic for why these particular cities are getting sort of picked on and others aren't, when in fact others are significantly more dependent on the system. But You know, those are the choices of the majority. There is a provision for farmers, as Chair Drazkowski laid out, but it really, you know, for those of us in the Metro, the way you should think about it, it incents farmers to go vote for more spending so that you in the Metro can pay for it. So, I mean, Metro members should just think about that provision a little bit. You know, there's also no homeowner property tax relief. In a $2 billion surplus, there's no homeowner property tax relief for homeowners and renters. You know, we usually try to increase the circuit breaker for homeowners even in deficit times, and this has, you know, none. So I think it's a huge miss on the property tax side of the tax bill. But there is a huge property tax cut for corporations, no question. As I've highlighted over the forecast window, it'll cost $5 billion, and it's permanently going to cost a deficit is what it's really going to cost. And it's being phased in a way so people can feel good that it's for small business, but the overwhelming price tag of the provision is not for small business, it's for big business, and it starts by phasing in it slowly by giving everyone a value exemption at $500,000. But the $5 billion provision overwhelmingly goes to the Metro, overwhelmingly goes to districts like mine and Representative Loons, and it's for folks in Minneapolis and St. Paul and the western and southern suburbs. And just some examples, you know, and Chair Davids knows, I requested this to get the top beneficiaries of that provision when it's fully phased in. And in Hennepin County, which people know is the wealthiest county in the state of Minnesota, there's no question about that, and has the most property tax base. So the biggest beneficiary of the bill is the Mall of America. So the tax cut is very expensive, $5 billion provision when fully phased in. The biggest winner will be Nader Gurmazian, who's not even a United States citizen. So huge, you know, huge checks for these folks who own these buildings. The second biggest provision, second biggest winner is the IDS, and somebody who lives in Bethesda, Maryland owns that. So somebody's going to get, you know, a big check from the state of Minnesota in reduced property taxes, and that would be fine if it didn't affect anything else and there weren't choices. But the truth is we all have to pay more then if we're going to pull $5 billion out of the system to give that person in Bethesda, Maryland a tax cut. You know, in the top 20 beneficiaries in that provision, they are from Canada, Florida, Bethesda, Maryland, Atlanta, Georgia. There are five from Chicago and Dallas. So just in the top 20 winners in that provision, they're not even Minnesotans. They go, I can provide this too. It's the 150 biggest beneficiaries on the commercial industrial property tax cut, and they're in Germany and Newport Beach, California, and Princeton, New Jersey, and Hartford, Connecticut, and El Segundo, California, and Canada, and Los Angeles. And so, you know, who are these people? I mean, do you know these people who own these skyscrapers and are going to get huge tax cuts? You know, these businesses aren't going to leave. People aren't going to pick up and take the IDS and move it to another state. Yet they're the biggest beneficiaries in the biggest tax cut in the bill. And so I know people are framing it as, you know, there's all these other good things going on, and there are a lot of other good things going on, but the biggest price tag in the bill is that provision. If you phase these provisions in so you can see them, and that provision alone is $1.7 billion in a bill that has a target of 2.4. So, you know, I know you will have a response, and I appreciate you letting me go on, Mr. Chair, but again, I'm not offering any amendments. I'm just making my points here. So, and we'll hear them again on the floor, but, you know, I think everyone knows in the Ways and Means Committee that the big winner in the budget resolution game was Chair Davids. I mean, the chair has the biggest bill with all the money, and that means the rest of the chairs have a lot less. In fact, as I already stated, the chair, Chair Davids, and he's carrying all the money for the transportation bill. And, you know, that's problematic, Mr. Chair. That's another shift and gimmick. That provision is not, if members want to look at it, again, you know, we're supposed to do spreadsheets here. So that provision, Mr. Chair, is on page 5, and it's lines 71 through 80. And it looks like that provision in 2016-17 cost $401 million in transportation. But as that phases in, that's not what that provision costs. And I think, you know, we just wish you would just put it on the sheet, that what it really costs, not, you know, out into the future. But that provision actually costs $615 million. And so these are all things somebody in the future is supposed to figure out, how to pay for what appears to be $2 billion and it's actually going to be almost three times as big, just because of how the legislation is written, you know, I think there's concern that we've been trying to reduce tax expenditures, and I think both parties have gotten where they've understood that tax expenditures are really just new spending programs. Sure, you can call them tax cuts, because if you're the guy who wins the lottery and you luckily get that one tax credit, you know, you happen to be the fitness facility that's going to have a tax credit for, you know, using that fitness facility, or, you know, that's in the bill, or you happen to get the New Markets tax credit, or you happen to be an angel investor, which, you know, you have to earn $258,000 and be SEC approved to even qualify for that. You know, if you happen to, you know, win those ones, well, it's a tax cut to you, but everyone else pays for it. Now, there are some that, you know, Mr. Chair, you carried the K-12 credit enhancement, and your increase in eligibility, I think, is helpful. I think we would disagree that we don't think private tuition should be part of that. But there's some that certainly Chair Davids has worked really hard to find a way to address things for average people. But on net, the bill is incredibly lopsided when you look at the true price. And all this new spending is going on. So, you know, people have to pay for these new spending provisions. There are tax cuts for the tobacco industry, no question. If that's the priority of the new majority, is to give tax cuts to the tobacco industry. There's tax cuts for the gaming industry. And, you know, one other thing I should note that's a little concerning is $890 million of the bill never had a hearing as a bill. So some of those were, you know, we had this, Representative Dean had a $100 million premium credit that just appeared on the spreadsheet, never had a hearing in taxes. I don't even know if there was ever a bill on it. Then we had the provider tax that was $227 million that appeared on the tax committee spreadsheet. It never had a hearing in taxes, and I don't know if that was a bill either, but sure never came to taxes. Then we had Chair Knobloch, you yourself attempted in Ways and Means to do a $23 million provision, which took money from five counties in the metro and gave it to others, and that never had a hearing anywhere. It was just an amendment. It did get moved over into taxes and showed up in the bill, but never had a hearing. The exemption provision that I think people would view as the middle class tax cuts, you know, and was cited as the biggest part of the bill. It's actually not when you phase these in, because it's 2 years and the other ones are permanent. So it's actually a very small part of the bill, but that provision alone cost $538 million, never even had a hearing, was never even introduced as a bill. So, Mr. Chair, we're putting provisions in bills that cost over $538 million without hearing them, with no public testimony. Now, to Chair David's credit, he absolutely took public testimony on his bill when he got it together, and people had an opportunity to come and talk about those provisions, but they did not follow a normal course where there was a bill that members of the tax committee could follow. They just showed up in the tax bill. So almost $900 million never had a hearing. We have one in the committee, as it was in the final bill. We're having one now. But I just want to highlight that, because I've heard so many members say things that other provisions in the past have happened without hearings in the dark of the night because they came through one body or the other. And every time I hear that about certain provisions, they're actually ones that had hearings, and they were bills. It just was the other body had them. And so often members forget that if one body or the other heard it, it had a hearing. Now, you know, I don't know if the provider tax and the premium health care credit and the exemption provision and the seed tip provision are getting hearings in the Senate right now, but if they don't, then that would be the case, that these provisions never had a hearing before they were put into an omnibus bill. And I know people who sit on this committee tend to be chairs or have been chairs. They understand the rhetoric, and I hope they will correct people when they get up on the floor and say, you know, that provision that became law never had a hearing. One I hear all the time is the Senate office billing. That was a bill. It was introduced in the Senate, actually had a hearing. It was added to the omnibus tax bill and then came through conference. So now we have something, and that was one side that had a full hearing. Now we have a bunch of tax provisions that cost about $900 million that have had no hearings. And, you know, you can imagine how the Senate, you know, is going to look at those and how the governor might feel about those. But, you know, I appreciate the indulgence. I again, want to thank Mr. Chair Davids. He really has, you know, we've really had a lot of fun in his committee. We have philosophical disagreements, I think, as, you know, groups of people around here. I do think it is, you know, it seems sort of exciting to be able to, you know, give all these folks who are asking for these things they want, but at what cost? And so this $2 billion targeted bill, which is, again, actually $4.5 billion in future costs, and in my estimation, deficit spending without a different plan, it's crowding out the rest of the budget. And I think that that alone, and you know, we had Commissioner Bowerly speak to the tax committee, and she cited that, you know, and I think she's the one who speaks for the governor on where this tax bill might go. And she talked about the priorities of not enough education spending and the tax bill crowding it out. And so, you know, I just hope it isn't too late for you to reconsider this bill, Mr. Chair, and the majority members to think about the true cost of this bill. And I think if you had known that this bill is not $2.4 billion but $4.5 billion, I think you might have a little different sense about it. Now, obviously, I couldn't get those numbers till the bill was released, which I believe was Saturday morning, so it takes the Department of Revenue a while to do the analysis. But I can provide it to you, and I think it you know, all of us should be concerned if, say, Chair Erdahl brings in a bill and it technically meets a target of $200 million, but the truth is it costs $600 million. I don't think we tolerate that on the finance side. And I don't know why we'd be doing it on this side of the budget. So, you know, Mr. Chair, I've said enough. I appreciate your indulgence. I appreciate Chair David's. And I know you will both have much to respond to me on, but thank you so much for your time.
Well, I will let Chair David's respond in a minute, but Representative Lencheski, let me first say, I know that. I know the tales then that are in the out years that Chair Davids and Chair Drazkowski have in the bill. And I guess we don't talk a lot about the tales here in like even 18-19 because we don't have a specific tales target. We haven't really talked about that a lot here. But I do think maybe now is an appropriate time, at least since we've had almost all the bills come to the committee at this point, certainly all the larger bills, maybe briefly talk about just where we are in terms of tails if you add all these bills up for 18-19. And I guess if I could, I'd maybe ask Mr. Marks to give us a rough estimate of the estimated amount of money that's on the bottom line in tails for 2018-19 with what we have or are expected to have with the ag bill. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, at this point, and you mentioned the uncertainty of the ag bill, it's that $10 million additional that I don't know how that's going to work in, but at this point, we're in the $640 million range for a positive balance for fiscal 18-19.
And so, thank you, Mr. Marks. Members, I guess I bring that up, first of all, just so that people know that as we have been budgeting with these bills, we do have a positive balance at the end of 18-19. In fact, put it in perspective, if I remember correctly, the last number I saw from the governor for his budget and what he had for a positive balance for tails in 18-19 was something in the $300 million range. I forget if it was $329 or $371, $371 million. And so, you know, we substantially exceed what the governor has in his recommendation in terms of our tails in 18-19. To the rest of your point, Chair Lencheski, and you're right. I mean, these many of the provisions in here do in 2020 to 21, 22 to 23 phase in further and do have some substantial costs. I have talked to Chair Drazkowski about that, Chair Davids about that. I did work with them on those issues to come up with numbers that I did think were numbers that we could handle based on, you know, past growth of the economy and comparisons of what the budget has done in the past and what you might expect it would do in the future based on the growth from 16-17 to 18-19. But certainly things can change. We've all been through budget crises here where we don't get as much money as we expect. I remember I was here some years ago when we were phasing in MVEST, and I think we were at 25% 1 year, 50%, 75%, 100%, and then the economy interfered, and we decided as a body that we couldn't do 25, 50, 75, 100, and then we took action and changed the law and corrected things. And if we are faced with a situation like that here, if this bill shall become law and we have these other additional projected tax cuts in 2020 to 21, 22 to 23, and we don't think we can handle them, I would expect that we would change them. And just like we changed things some years ago when we were faced with that situation for the MVEST, I suppose we would look at it here too. You know, I'm very comfortable myself that particularly on the transportation side, we're in very good shape for the projections that we have. And really, if you look at what Chair Davids and Chair Druskowski are projecting, you know, $750 million more in 20 and 21, if you back out the $600 million of surplus that we've got in 18-19, and another $750 million in 22-23, does not, to me, seem to be an unreasonable amount for the state to be able to absorb. And so, Representative Lincheski, those are very reasonable concerns. I have looked at those concerns. I have talked to Chair Davids and Chair Druskowski, and of course it's just a personal judgment with which I, you know, presume you'll disagree, but I have looked at that, and at least I myself am satisfied with it. And with that, let me turn it over to Chair Davids, if he wants to respond as well.
I don't know if Chair Lincheski has comments on that. Or
Chair Lincheski.
Well, and Mr. Chair, you know, I hear you, that you're personally uncomfortable with that. I'm personally uncomfortable with that. And, you know, we all have the same election certificate. We all get one vote. But, you know, I think you ought to just think about that a little bit, you know. So if we all just want to predict the future and just say, you know, I'm comfortable that the money will be there, it seems to me tomorrow when we take up the education bill, amendments would be in order to move the per pupil up, let's say, 5 and 5, and just phase it in a little bit and just say it's just going to be there. And it should not be ruled out of order then, because that's just fine. You know, or I noticed Representative Anderson, and I think we have 4 of them now, but Representative Anderson introduced some bills this week that abolished the income tax. I think that's about $8 billion a year. And abolish the state sales tax, which is about $6 billion a year. But you know that we could do that vote then on the floor, and the speaker shouldn't rule it out of order that we move to, you know, have an amendment to abolish the Minnesota individual income tax, and we just phase it in, you know, over 50 years or something. And so as long as we can find it in these targets, then that's fine, because people just have a feeling about if an $8 billion per year deficit would be okay. Or increasing K-12 funding 5 and 5, or what the heck, 10 and 10 on the formula. And just phase it in, because this bill has a $4.5 billion one provision that's not being paid for. And in total, they're over $7 billion. So I sure hope we'll be consistent when we mark up the tax bill and the other finance bills, that provisions that just phase in, they don't have to balance as long as they work in the current tails. And so members can just pick a percentage then and make all their amendments work. And so, you know, I just don't get the logic there, honestly. I think the straight-up way to do it in Minnesota's fortune, as you know, Mr. Chair, Minnesota budgets with a 4-year window. We do planning estimates, and we even count inflation down on the bottom for people to look at. People have opinions if that should be there or not. But at least we can see it, and I've told you I carried that legislation, at least so members can see it. But in those 2 forecast windows, you know, it's great we do that, because some states do 1 year or 2 years. We look at 4, you know, and that's to help people stop doing things like this. So members can actually look at the spreadsheets and go, hey, that's not $15, that's $115 in 3 years. And that's what's going on in this bill. And I just think you ought to think about that. If people's personal judgment about what might happen in 2021 and 2022, you know, is how we're going to start budgeting. I think I can feel some amendments coming for the tax bill that say we can just start, you know, I could take the Anderson bills and just move them and phase them in over multiple years and ask for a roll call. And I really hope you think about that and really consider adjusting this. I also think it just, you know, throws you in a very difficult situation to be done on May 18th. I do not see, you know, I think the 2.4 was hard enough for y'all, but, you know, not, you said you actually had seen those numbers yourself. We had to wait till the bill came out to get them, and then you can be sure that, you know, the governor knows that this provision doesn't cost $500 million. It costs, you know, $5 billion, and you can imagine the future in negotiations with that, but you know, I just hope we won't budget on how we personally feel the economy might be in the next decade. So.
Well, Representative Lincheski, I guess let me just say I don't think I said this was based on my feeling of what the economy would be in the next decade. What I said is that if you looked at the past growth estimates that we've had, if you look at the change from 14-15 to 16-17, if you did some projections on that, based on that, you know, it's my judgment that there would be money for this. And again, we have an additional $600 million projected just at the beginning of 19 or at the end of 19 to already start to offset some of what you're talking about. But beyond that, as I also mentioned, you know, if things don't turn out that way, if the economy doesn't perform the way we expect, we'll make adjustments. And I certainly would expect that we would make them. And that would be something that we would have to do. Like I said, also worked with Chair Davids and Chair Drazkowski on these items, and I guess I don't know if they want to talk further about that. But, you know, it's obviously a personal judgment. You know, you've got your opinion, which I respect, Chair Lincheski. You know, we don't, as a state, project out 6 years, 8 years. I'm not sure if we could reasonably do that, but... You know, this bill will obviously be subject to negotiation once it presumably passes, and then we'll see what happens on it. Before I turn things over to Chair Davids, I should have mentioned this earlier, but I do want to, on a different subject, make people aware of a couple of letters that are in people's packets. We didn't have anyone that specifically asked to testify today, but we've got a couple of letters regarding the vape shops that are in people's packets, and I want to make people aware of that. And so with that, maybe I can ask Chair Davids and Chair Drazkowski if they'd like to respond.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Or I guess there's another question. I'll defer to
Representative Carlson. Okay, go ahead, Chair Davids.
If you could go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't going to say anything because Representative Lincheski did a very good job of wrapping up our concerns with the bill, and I am on the Tax Committee, as you are. But I just wanted to share an observation with the discussion of tails. It's probably unfortunate we didn't have that discussion here in committee, but I think one of the key things that she pointed out, you may be in balance with those projections, but she did point out a lot of that money is going out of state and out of the country. And that money would much better be spent in the state of Minnesota developing our economy and not developing the economy in Dallas, Texas, or in Edmonton, Canada. That's what's going to be my comment.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm confused, and now that both Chair Lincheski and Chair Carlson brought it up, Representative Davids, my experience with commercial property and tenant leases, if you as a landlord get a real estate tax break, part of a triple net lease requires that to go back to the little shops in your strip mall or your mega mall, so the little new immigrant that's running the little kiosk at the mega mall, if the supposable implication that the Canadian owners of the building, a good owner of a building, passes on triple net costs. So any increases in the snow plowing, the real estate taxes, the insurance are paid by the little tenants. And those are the folks that I've been hearing from. I don't hear from the owner in Canada because he doesn't care if the taxes go up. He's just going to pass it on to the little kiosk owner. And so that's always been my experience, that's the way you do that. Is it different now in Minnesota? I haven't been really active in that arena for a few years. I've been stuck at the state office building, but that was never my experience, and I'm really surprised. But, and I wasn't even going to say anything because I only heard it once, and I thought maybe I'm out of touch. But then when both of the members of the minority mentioned, I thought maybe I'm confused.
Chair Davids.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McNamara, you're exactly right.
Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate somebody pointing that out in the bill as to where that's required. That is not the law. You do not have to do that. If you own that building, you will get the benefit of this tax cut paid for by everybody else. There is nothing that requires you to do that. And in fact, I have never seen anything that says that that's mostly what happens. And I would, if I would like to see where in the tax bill that's required.
Mr. Well, Chairman?
Chair Davis.
It's not the tax bill. What I was referring to, Chair Lanchesky, is the comments Chair McNamara said. Basically, that's what happens. It's not in the tax bill. But in the real world, if you have a triple net lease, if you reduce property tax in a lot of leases, it's right in there that that has to be given to the small business owner. So that's what I was referring to. It's not in the bill. But that's what happens in the real world.
Representative Lanchesky.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe later. We can ask the chamber if they don't want to now. They're sitting right here in the audience to tell us if all these large businesses are going to be required to do that. And I know you're not doing public testimony, and they can walk through what percentage of businesses have those kind of agreements. And in fact, the bill is written to phase in that the first $500,000 of value is excluded, and that's where the trick comes in, that that could happen there. That's a minor part of the price tag of the bill. This bill, if it was fully phased in, and this provision in this biennium is $1.6 billion for that provision, $5 billion over 5 years, deficit spending, and the overwhelming majority goes to folks who are not doing what was just walked through. And I think we could ask the Minnesota Business Partnership and the Minnesota Chamber to provide that information. So, you know, I hate to hear on the record that people are going to vote for something like this and think that's a typical sort of thing that would play out.
Well, and, just if one of them wants to come forward and has some Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because Chair Lanchesky, we're not sending money to anybody with this provision. All we're doing is stop taking it from them. That's all this does. There's nobody in Minnesota sending money to anybody else because of this provision in the bill. None. And so that's the key distinction here. And Mr. Chair, members, I went around the state to 12 different locations and heard from over 500 Minnesotans, people who were small business owners from the gal in Aiken running the pie shop up there to poor souls in all parts of Minnesota who own commercial lots and are trying to figure out how to get rid of them because they're just not able to pay for these anymore. These are not rich people that we're looking at with this bill. What we're asking simply to stop taking money from people in here and provide some relief to the people of Minnesota that are paying for this very large government we have here in the state.
Chair Davids.
Mr. Chair, former Chair Lanchesky said all businesses. She went to the chamber to see if all businesses did this. We never said all businesses did this. I'm familiar with a lot of businesses that do it this way. I never said all businesses do it that way.
Representative Lanchesky.
Well, Mr. Chair, and just, you know, in response to Representative Drazkowski, and, you know, he's been a great chair, too. We've had a lot of fun on his committee. You know, when I use the term pay, I mean the broader economic sense that we, I think most of us understand here in a public policy perspective, which isn't that yet that someone's writing the check to pay for that tax cut. That's true. But, you know, the fundamental way to think about it is if there's, you know, 10 people and collectively they need a certain amount of services, and you decide, you know, two of them don't have to pay anymore, what happens to the other eight? They all pay more for the exact same services. That's the implicit trade-off. So if we're going to buy a quality education system or a clean environment or a good health and human services system, when we let a big set of taxpayers off the hook, then we do all pay more. That's where we're all paying more. Now, typical conservative response to that is, well, that sounds like a liberal. How about if we just spend less? How about if we just spend less? If 10 people were buying the same amount of government services and now two get a free ride, so eight have to pay more. Let's not have those eight pay more. Let's have them pay the same they were. Let's not spend as much. Now they're paying the identical price they were the day before and getting less. So either way, it's an implicit subsidy from everybody else. That's how it works. So when you remove $5 billion out of your almost $40 billion budget, there are going to be trade-offs. There is just no denying that. And I think it's just a different value about if we are in a position now in the state of Minnesota where we're ready to do tax cuts. And I certainly was here as Chair Knobloch and Chair Davids were when we had those other tax cuts that we all voted for. I voted for them too. And if anyone thinks the economy is going to be just as rosy today as it was in 10 years, okay. You know, all you have to do is look at Minnesota's history here. We've seen 5 billion-year flips in a biennium. 5 billion in a biennium, and I've been here for them. So, and I voted for more billions in tax in cutting services than I have ever voted for in tax cuts. Under Governor Pawlenty, I voted for $6 billion in one biennium. So I'm not afraid to vote for, you know, for spending or against it, for tax cuts or against it, but it has to make sense. And this to me is not making sense. It's because, first of all, the real price tag of the bill is twice the size, and we're not talking about that. But, you know, we just have a fundamental difference. When people say, you know, if we decide Representative Liebling doesn't have to pay income taxes this year, some people would say that's just her keeping her own money. I think the rest of us would all get, like, that's pretty unfair. How about me? Now I have to pay a little more because she doesn't have to, or I have to get a little less to pay the same. So that's what I'm talking about. And, you know, that's sort of fundamental macroeconomic principles. These are trade-offs. These are choices. And I think we just have a difference of opinion, and I respect that we have a different philosophy. But thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Griscoe.
If I could, I would just add, Representative Lonchesky, the only thing that is not accurate there is that other people do not have to pay more under this proposal. As a matter of fact, the expenditures match or actually are becoming less than the revenue in each of those situations that the chair talked about. So there are not other people paying more because we cut these taxes. There are not other people paying more. They're either paying the same or in some cases some of them are paying less because they're part of the $2 billion in tax cuts as well. So anyway, I look forward to the discussion on the floor, and you're right, Representative Lonchesky, we have philosophical differences. Thank you.
All right, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of House File 848 as amended being referred to the General Register, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. House File 848 as amended is referred to the General Register. Members, I've just been informed that session is going to start at 4 o'clock. Members, we don't have a Ways and Means Committee meeting scheduled tomorrow. We are planning on having one Monday. I'll let you know the time. Please plan for the posting on that. Presumably we'll be doing the agriculture bill, and I'll let you know if there's something else. And with that, members, meeting is adjourned.